You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello, welcome to the Daily Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and this is being recorded very late on Tuesday, June 17th. And it shouldn't shock you that I have to deal with the war between the least surprising war in history between Iran and the Israelis. I think there's more positive than negatives here for us. The nuclear weapons issue is a complete red herring. It's nonsense. That was never an issue. They can't use it, even if they had it. There's no evidence that they want it. Although this may change their mind. Israel has it. Pakistan has a nuclear weapon. But that's just a pretext. Donald Trump's foreign policy is unraveling. And it has something to do with some of the people he puts in charge. Donald Trump absolutely says that he knows that Iran is very close to having nuclear weapons. And I don't know how he knows this, except that Netanyahu told him. Now, the intelligence community in the U.S. finally told the truth, saying that that's not the case. Iran is not building such a weapon, and the supreme leader, the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, has not authorized a nuclear program, and it did exist. It was suspended in 2003, but he doesn't really care. Tulsi Gabbard maybe is not the person for this. I don't know if you remember, I was the first person to mention her when she was first elected to Congress as someone on the Syria issue many years ago. She wasn't a household name at the time. Whether or not she should be there or not is a separate matter, but at least she's correct here. So he has to make a decision who's correct, Netanyahu or Gabbard and everyone behind her. Netanyahu knows better, according to Trump. That means Donald Trump will support Israeli acts of aggression against Iran. If they respond to these acts of war, the U.S. will destroy Iran. But that's the U.S. It doesn't have that capability. I've gone through this 100 times. I'm going to go through it again. But the way that this is presented, and what it all comes down to, is the power of the Jews. Paul Craig Roberts, the Assistant Secretary of the Treasury under Ronald Reagan, says, "The number of Jews on the judicial bench, in executive positions, in the media and finance, on university faculties and administrations is vastly in excess of their percentage of the U.S. population. America had holds on appointments of white heterosexual males in order to advance DEI, but never holds on Jewish appointments. Unlike Muslims and Gentiles, Jews stick together and they align with Israel." Now that's a fact that no one can deny. Jews dominate law schools, media, finance. No quotas ever affect them because they're not white. That means that their priorities become American priorities. Their enemies become American enemies. It is a form of colonial rule, and it absolutely needs to end. The initial attack on Iran wasn't a huge shock to anybody. But the more obvious truth, and I'm not the only one who's saying this, the Iranians have absolutely no interest in building a nuclear weapon at this point. It's a PR issue. Who are they going to nuke with this? Israel can't be attacked with a weapon like this because it will release radioactivity into Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Lebanon, Jordan, and Syria. Very obvious point. But, you know, China exploded their first nuclear device in 1964, right after Mao slaughtered 50 million of his own Chinese people during the Great Leap Forward. That was no problem, though. But when the Jews are involved, it is a problem. The media, as you know, can't be trusted on anything. And sometimes even our own people have to watch what they say. Iran has never been, and they are not at this present time, a threat to anyone. Iran has not attacked another nation, and everything they have in their arsenal is defensive. Everything they're doing is retaliatory. Now you contrast this to the U.S. and Israel, who started many wars and slaughtered millions of innocent people throughout the globe. Iran comes out of this looking amazing. But Israel didn't attack Iran to prevent them from developing a weapon it couldn't use. What have I been saying for many, many years now? Israel attacked Iran to push it out of the first world, to make her as impoverished as Syria, Libya, and Lebanon have become. An impoverished Iran would mean that Israel can carry the genocide and the Palestinians everywhere, take over the Temple Mount, push the Palestinians out of the West Bank and Gaza, move its boundaries to the Litani River in Jordan, even push towards Damascus in Syria, seizing all the water aquifers in the Levant. Now, that's a tall order, even without Iran. With Iran, that's impossible. Iran cannot use atomic weapons for offensive purposes. They might need them for deterrence. Israel, on the other hand, has no defensive need for atomic weapons, but has developed them for offense alone. Jewish writer Dan Lieberman said this, "Not realizing that Israel has attacked a sovereign nation that has not posed a threat to its people, has continued its merciless onslaught against the civilized world, emphasizes the ignorance that pervades us. Call for a Security Council meeting to discuss and do nothing about the situation, not a meeting to defend the nation's sovereignty. Instead, we have an American president gloating over his deception, telling ABC News Chief Washington Correspondent Jonathan Carl, 'I think it's been excellent. We gave them a chance and they didn't take it. They got hit hard, very hard. They got hit about as hard as you're going to get hit, and there's more to come. There's a lot more to come.'" Well, if you haven't been following very closely, you might think that's true, but it isn't. The Iranians were given absolutely no chance, and in fact, they shouldn't really have been involved in the International Atomic Agency. It was Donald Trump who terminated the JCPOA, a treaty that already prevented Iran from enriching uranium. But why would Iran trust the Americans anyway? They have every right to create nuclear weapons. They have every right to enrich uranium. They're a first world country with an extremely powerful scientific establishment, which is something that hasn't penetrated the American mind in a long time. So the media interpretation, of course, is also expected. Taking advantage of public ignorance, the Jewish New York Times, the newspaper is exclusively Jewish, and a columnist named Brett Stevens, a complete idiot, has a editorial or a column. "Israel had the courage to do what needed to be done." You know, he pontificates here. "All other options have run their course." Then he says, "But for those who worry about a future in which one of the world's most awful regimes takes advantage of international irresolution to gain possession of the most dangerous weapons, Israel's strike is a display of clarity and courage for which we may all one day be grateful." But again, only mass public ignorance. No, I'm saying this here. That's his quote, his idiotic quote. Only mass public ignorance can make such an emotional appeal and a stupid appeal like that actually work. Again, from 1979 onward, nothing in the Western press can be believed about Iran. I don't know if it was Ron Owens or someone who said that U.S. policy towards Iran has been an unbroken chain of relentless hectoring, belligerence, and demonization. Johnson's law is ironclad here. But Iran's an enemy for several reasons, and I, you know, this is probably nothing new. But at one level, the regime despises Iran for asserting its sovereign control over her own vast resources. More specifically, though, she threatens Israeli expansion. The only reason that the U.S. is present in the Middle East whatsoever, at all, at any level, is to protect Israel. Iran is an economic and scientific success, using some variant of a national socialist and very religious style of economic system. They don't charge interest on loans and things like that. So this is simply Jewish self-interest. Jewish enemies become America's enemies. Now, the pro-Israel contributions to Trump, you know, in 2016, Trump wasn't taking, if you recall, wasn't taking donations. He was self-financing, which is why he initially was seen as a threat. Well, that ended. Now, Jews despise Trump, at least in America, in Canada. But a handful of billionaires have financed his 2024 campaign. I think it comes to $230 million. The bulk tied to the 2024 cycle. Direct campaign contributions, independent expenditures, and super PAC spending. Remember, the Supreme Court said that the limitations on this were illegal. And we all know who it is. I mean, Miriam Adelson, through her Preserve America PAC, contributed an estimated $100 to $150 million to Trump's 2024 campaign. I guess the lowest figure is $106 million. The very fact that they don't know what it is in total shows exactly the level of control over this stuff. Sheldon, her husband, who died in 2021, was very loud in wanting a military attack on Iran, no matter how many Americans were killed in the process. In fact, what he wanted was for a nuclear strike to hit the desert, because he thinks this is possible, as a way to scare them, because, you know, they wouldn't know what a nuclear weapons looks like. And then, if they didn't comply, you then hit the capital city. You know, Iran has been digging in, waiting for this attack for a very long time. This is not a shock to it. You have a lot of, you know, Mossad agents who are able to wipe out some of these high-ranking officers. We'll talk about that in a minute. But they were waiting for this. They have decoys everywhere. They seem to think that this, you could just simply do this without any kind of response. They live in their own world. But Miriam is no different than her husband. So she's created all of these think tanks, not even think tanks, United Against Nuclear Iran, controlled by the Adelson Family Foundation, the stupid Foundation for Defense of Democracies. You know, they have actual writers there who think that this is a scholarly thing, and not just a, you know, not just a platform for these Jewish elites. And they just, and of course, all of these just have been promoting for this very attack to occur. Don't forget, 2015, I remember it very distinctly, Trump condemned the war in Iraq that started in 1990. That's one of the things that made him very early on a pariah. He used to be a member of the regime. He got kicked out of it real fast. He won his elections based on foreign policy, based on peace, and breaking the insane immigration policies at home, that white lives actually matter. In other words, nationalism was his sole message. But now, promoting a war with Iran, and then claiming that that's America First, I mean, what was the America First movement? Prior to Pearl Harbor, the America First movement said, keep the U.S. out of Europe's wars. Very good idea. So FDR had to figure out a way to get the Axis to do something crazy and to break them, and that's exactly what Pearl Harbor was. This is the very opposite of what the America First movement was. But starting on the 14th, American personnel were being moved out of parts of the Middle East. And his administration now claims, now, and I've seen twice, first by Marco Rubio and now by him personally, that the U.S. had nothing to do with these recent attacks on Iran. It's a very odd thing to say. And I think there's some truth to that. Everyone's saying that they couldn't have done this without the U.S. No, it works the other way around. Israel gives the orders. But the State Department has pulled non-essential staff from Baghdad. There's embassy there in Iraq for very obvious reasons. But Trump has destroyed a lot of the capital that he has built up by supporting the horrendous genocide in Gaza, West Bank, Lebanon, Syria, and his support of Netanyahu. Again, the very opposite of America First. There's no agreement in the Ukrainian war. But the negotiating team, there hasn't been even a proposal. This war was simply done. There was nothing on the table. The issue of enrichment hadn't even been discussed. There's no real justification for this war, but since when is that? No, you know, there has been justification for war in a very long time. Now, Israel claims to be able to launch a full-scale operation into Iran, which I'm saying is impossible. This is now the fourth front they have to fight on. But Netanyahu's going to do what he pleases. The entire thing seems to say that Netanyahu expects Iran to deliver this massive retaliatory blow that will then require their golem to intervene. But even that very simple logic is problematic. Now, you have this guy, Steve Witkoff. The people he's promoting, Donald Trump is promoting to these positions. They're very questionable. Steve Witkoff is one of the worst. He's a billionaire, and the only reason he's been promoted is that he's a billionaire who gave money to Trump's campaign. He doesn't know anything. This is not his world. However, he's correct when he says, and the Senate Republicans said that Iran's retaliation would and is, as we speak right now, overwhelming Israel's defenses. And this is a mass casualty event. I mean, he's right. A stop clock is right a couple of times a day. But the fact that Senate Republicans needed to be told this in the first place shows you their level of ignorance. The U.S. can't make war on Iran except in a symbolic way at this point. I've been through this so many hours on this show, I can't go through it again. But at a minimum, Iran is simply defending itself. Iran is better armed than the U.S. is. Iran is better armed than the Israelis are. Iran is a dominant hegemon in the area with hypersonic weapons. The U.S. doesn't have hypersonic weapons. It's incapable of creating them. This is what happens when these fake scholars and fake analysts construct an enemy in their brains rather than try to understand them. Airstrikes by Israel mean that they'll see the impact of these developments in destroyed military bases, weapons depots, critical infrastructure, and Israel's prized nuclear facilities. And I say that for a very specific reason, because Iranian intelligence took a pile of documents that give Iran extensive intelligence superiority here. On June 8th, their intelligence minister, Ismail Qutab, confirmed that these materials, including documents on Israel's clandestine nuclear weapons and records of its nuclear plant's facilities, has been transferred to Tehran. Now, hitting Israel's secret nuclear facilities, if this thing continues to escalate, is on the table. And these are unpleasant facts that neither Trump nor Netanyahu have understood. In other words, Iran now has a precise location of Israel's nuclear facilities, which they will destroy if Israel continues their arrogant attack. But let me go back to Trump's inability to make a deal here, of all people. His first posts on Truth Social. I'm going to give you just a few snippets here, and I'm not the first one to do this, but the most common one he repeats is, I gave Iran a chance, or chance after chance, to make a deal. No, he did no such thing. There were unilateral demands that were designed to be rejected. He torpedoed the original deal. Then he says, I told them that it would be much worse than anything they know, anticipated, or were told. In other words, the decision to strike an attack had already been made. The point is to lay out demands that they couldn't possibly accept and still be a sovereign nation. Trump said certain Iranian hardliners spoke bravely, but they're dead now. And it's only going to get worse. Then he says the next already planned attacks will be even more brutal, which means that he is fully accepting of this assassination program. Then finally, Iran must make a deal before there's nothing left and save what was once known as the Iranian Empire. I don't know what he means by that last part. There was no, I don't know, does he mean the Persian Empire? Anyway, this is a pathological, not just Trump's, but the point is to force Tehran to capitulate without even putting up a fight. The very fact that the nuclear negotiations in Oman were taken seriously by Tehran was a huge mistake. It's a simple matter. Either you capitulate or you go to total war. And apparently, total war is now the reality with the U.S. as a direct participant. The Pezeshkian presidency in Iran has plenty of intellectual proponents of some kind of accommodation to the West. You have that in Russia, too. You have this very strange, it's a psychological matter, this false sense of security, forgetting what Zionism actually is. This is not a preemptive attack whatsoever. But it goes beyond Iran. This is an attack on the BRICS energy grid. This is an imperial war against BRICS and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. And don't forget about Pakistan and Turkey in all of this. Now, the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, there's no verification, and I don't trust anything, but claim that missile silos and mobile complexes were destroyed in Iran before they were placed on combat alert. I don't think that's true, only because, again, they've been digging in for a very long time. This is a first world country. This isn't Bolivia. The overwhelming majority of Iran's ballistic missiles is stored in deep, hardened underground silos and tunnels. It's extremely difficult to get to. There's no evidence that the attacks destroyed Iran's nuclear infrastructure, which is also buried deep underground. It's easy for me to say, sitting here, allowing the International Atomic Agency into their country like their children needed to be babysat. Letting them in so the regime's spies could collect all the info they needed to facilitate Israeli strikes. This was a huge problem. The murder of a top figure like Ali Shamkhani, key advisor, Khamenei, who, by the way, was Iran's lead nuclear negotiator. Decades of influence. He's been around a very long time. It's a huge blow. It's also a terrorist act, since he was not a combatant. Now, this has been going on for some time. I've reported on this show, I want to say 15 years at least, the systematic slaughter of Iranian nuclear scientists. This goes way back. Now, this recent one has at least 9. Now, these men are civilians. And they're not involved in any nuclear weapons program. Their training and scholarship, which is not secret, a lot of it's even in English, is in nuclear power. Mohammed Taranchi and Fiddu and Abbasi. Media outlets can make up whatever they want. But Taranchi was a theoretical physicist, president of Iran's Islamic Azad University, and was president of the Shahid Beheshti University from right until 2016, then became president of the Islamic Azad University in Tehran. He is one of the top figures on the planet. Development of peaceful nuclear science and photonics. He has no connection whatsoever to anything based on weapons. None of his research is like that. The fact is that Iran's nuclear industry is in advance of the U.S. But still, despite all that, he was placed under sanctions in the U.S. Treasury Department in 2020, some of you may remember. Again, the point is to make Iran poor. It has nothing to do with weapons, and this is the proof of it. Abbasi is another one. He used to be in the Iranian parliament. Again, a doctorate in nuclear physics. He worked for the defense ministry, but there was nothing there connected with weaponry. He almost escaped. They tried to kill him in 2010, and instead they murdered Majid Shahrari. But this recent attack, you have Abdul Hamad Manuchar, Ahmad Zulfagari, Amir Fekwi, Ali Karimi, Mansour Asghari, and Saeed Borji. These are top-level people in their field. None of these people were trained in nuclear weaponry, warheads, or anything else. That means these were terror attacks on harmless civilians. Zulfagari was the editor of Nuclear Energy Quarterly Journal. His research was on heavy concrete, lead, gamma radiation, etc. One of the things that list of people were involved with is making sure that the nuclear program was national, that they were totally self-sufficient, but had no connection or ability or really knowledge of putting together nuclear weaponry. Remember, I think it started with Ardashir Houssampour's assassination in 2007. And in 2010 was Massoud Ali Mamadi and Majid Desirari, and also in 2010. The Rus Rejindad was the fourth murdered. Mustafa Roshan, I should say, in 2012. Fakhrizadeh was the architect of Iran's nuclear energy industry. He was murdered in 2020, in November of 2020. Now, one of the reasons that this matters, of course, these are terrorist acts, is that the International Atomic Energy Agency, which is connected to the UN, is the creation of the regime and serves it. They're based in Vienna, and they have a tremendous bias towards Iran. They were going to find something. In fact, they even eventually condemned the Iranians after 20 years of having no problems because they were upgrading centrifuges at the Fordow nuclear plant. The vote that Iran was non-compliant with its safeguards obligations, it was 19 votes in favor and 3 against. And the 3 against were Russia, China, and Burkina Faso. Now, what the hell is Burkina Faso voting in an atomic agency? What they have no, they don't have an economy. They have sticks and mud. That's about it. But at least they did the right thing here. But why is Burkina Faso even consulted on this? There were 11 abstentions. And that was just before the recent attack began. But there has been these politically motivated attacks on Iran's peaceful nuclear program, despite its own formal reports that confirm everything I'm saying. Everything that was perfectly peaceful, acceptable, because they know that oil doesn't last forever. Nuclear energy is safe. It doesn't pollute. And does a lot more than just provide power. Now, the head of the IAEA is Rafael Grossi, who, by the way, he has a PhD in my field. I don't know how he's making decisions here on this stuff. He's making technical and legal decisions that he has no right to make. But they're completely... Look at a picture of this guy. He looks like a weasel. But the Iranians said this is shaped by the psychological and political operations the Zionist regime has been conducting against the Islamic Republic of Iran. Of course, they're right. They needed some justification. This is very technical. It has nothing to do with weaponry at all. It doesn't matter. And frankly, there is no reason to babysit the Iranians. You can babysit the Israelis in the U.S., but not the Iranians. They have a right to do whatever they want in their economy. There's very few things that they can do weapon-wise. So he was in full compliance with these babysitting regulations. Their own reports, the IAEA reports, don't reflect what Grossi said. It was an invented technicality. They drafted a resolution that whose main content contradicts the politically motivated report by the IAEA Director General, who, again, doesn't have any connection to the nuclear industry. What they tried to find just before these attacks occurred was a technicality. It was stupid. And Grossi, has no right really talking about it in his own name anyway. So, that brings us to June 13th. Operation Rising Lion. Israel's Air Force launched dozens of strikes against Iran, targeting, among other things, its nuclear energy program. Now, there is no evidence or any report of any nuclear leakages. A lot of this stuff is underground. I don't think they've done much. Again, Iran's been digging in for years. They have decoys everywhere. However, when the Iranians retaliated, they hit and at least set on fire their Pentagon, the Hakiria. But after the 14th, Israel isn't even trying to intercept Iranian missiles anymore. Iranian missiles, as well as the Houthi missiles in Yemen, are hypersonic. They cannot be intercepted. Now, the Wall Street Journal, which is an unreliable tabloid, on June 13th, they had to admit that Netanyahu raised the possibility of strikes against Iran in a phone conversation with President Trump, confirmed by two U.S. officials who were listening, and Trump did make sense. He said, I want to see diplomacy run its course first. But because there was no trust in the Israelis, on June 11th, there was some non-essential personnel pulled out of the region. No one trusts Israel. So on June 12th, Thursday, the day before the strike, Trump said that he wouldn't describe an attack as imminent, but he said it's something that very well could happen. And I think he meant it. I don't think he even knew. But Israel is losing this. U.S. is not equipped, not after the situation with Ukraine and Taiwan. They're running out of these. Anti-missile systems. Almost all of the Iranian counterattacks have penetrated the anti-ballistic missile system. They can't be stopped by the Thaad missile defense either. They're critically short on weaponry, and the actual units on the ground are being destroyed. But there's a script that they're following. There's a lot of videos posted all over the web for their interpretation to be taken seriously. Iran has set much of Israel on fire. especially in Tel Aviv and Haifa and other major cities, targeting, as I mentioned, Israeli nuclear arsenal and their military sites. Now, President Putin has supported Iran's defense from the beginning. He offered his own services for mediation, and this is why Putin always had a line open to Tel Aviv. This is why he always had to play nice with them sometimes, because this stuff may happen. He needs a line open to them. Making matters worse for the Israelis, Turkey and Russia are of one mind in a phone conversation the other day. So, Donald Trump created a negotiation system where the demand was to reduce their enrichment program to zero. In other words, to destroy their nuclear program entirely, which they couldn't possibly accept. He gave Iran 5 days to respond, but Israel launched her attack after day three. No one trusts these people. Israel targeted military facilities in Tehran throughout the country. Apparently, dozens of high-ranking military officers, including Iran's top two commanders. The Iranians confirmed the attacks killed Major General Hossein Salami, commander of the IRGC, and Mohammad Bagheri, chief of staff. I think it was Iran's envoy to the UN, Amir Saeed Rahvani, that 78 were killed total. The Natanz site, the nuclear site in Iran, was struck on June 13th around 4:15 a.m., but only superficial damage was reported. Donald Trump said, "The U.S. makes the best and most lethal military equipment anywhere in the world by far, and Israel has a lot of it, with much more to come, and they know how to use it," which I think is kind of a backhanded slap at the Ukrainians. But there's no connection with reality there. There were no negotiations. He knew that the Iranians couldn't accept this. You know, Obama had negotiated the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, which itself was an insult. The Chinese and the Russians went along. They were treated like children. Iran is the only non-belligerent party in this whole situation. They have a right to build what they want. So for 15 years, Iran agreed to enrich uranium up into 3.67% and no heavy water. For 15 years. The IAEA is a politicized organization like all the rest of them. As I said, on June 12th, the agency came up with a very convenient breach, censure, the first one in 2 decades. But the West and the Israelis completely overestimate what they're capable of. The IDF issued its own rationale, saying weapons of mass destruction in the hands of the Iranian regime are a threat to the state of Israel and a significant threat to the entire world. The state of Israel will not allow a regime whose goal is the destruction of the state of Israel to possess weapons of mass destruction. Then Defense Minister Israel Katz said, "We are now at a critical juncture. If we miss it, we will have no way to stop Iran from obtaining nuclear weapons that will endanger our own existence." And Netanyahu, of course, went to this Jewish hyperbole and these bizarre histrionics Jews are known for. "If we don't attack, then it's 100% that we will all die," he said in a video statement. That's a cluster B persona. It's a language of neurosis. Keep in mind that about 85% of Israelis accept and support Israeli actions in Gaza. And I have no doubt that maybe not as much, but a large majority accept this as well. In March of 2025, Tulsi Gabbard said, and this was a Senate Intelligence Committee, "There is no nuclear weapons program." But this means that Israel is fighting on at least three fronts. She also has to intercept Hezbollah rocket attacks and Hamas at the same time. And now, with Houthis now stepping up their rocket and drone attacks against Israel. The U.S. is in no position to help. And anti-missile batteries are very rarely seen. Ammunition is very low. This has been a critical issue from the beginning. There's nothing preemptive about that. For 40 years, the Israelis have been saying, even Netanyahu personally, for 40 years that the Iranians are a year or two away from developing a massive nuclear arsenal. You know, one of the strongest arguments, there's a guy with a very weird name, same as Malek Afzali, that so many in the industry in Iran were very, very frustrated because they would like to build a nuclear weapon, but the government won't let them. Now, these aren't people who are trained in weapons whatsoever, but they think it should be at least looked into. But their government has prevented it. And this is fairly well known. So, Pete Hegseth, who, again, he shouldn't be where he is. I don't like some of these appointments. It was just Wednesday he told the Senate that, this is exactly what he said. There have been plenty of indications Iran has been moving their way towards something that would look like a nuclear weapon. That's what he said. That's how you have to talk when you work down there. So an idiot like Tom Cotton, who at least Tom Cotton was an officer, you know, at one point. He's on a chicken hawk. Cotton then takes this and runs with it. Hegseth has confirmed that Iran's terrorist regime is actively working towards a nuclear weapon. Hegseth didn't say that. Let me repeat what he said. Hegseth said that there have been plenty of indications that Iran has been moving their way towards something that would look a lot like a nuclear weapon. Which is saying absolutely nothing. If there was actual intelligence, Hegseth would have said it. Under previous administrations, they would have simply invented it. This is just verbal gymnastics. This sort of kind of looks like a nuclear weapon. And people heard what they wanted to hear, then they build an entire argument around it. I've talked about this before. Iran has every right to build a nuclear weapon if it wants to. It does not threaten anybody. I always found it interesting, the second in command of DOD is Steven Feinberg. He doesn't get a lot of press time. Another billionaire investor, he is not connected to the defense world at all. He's second in command at DOD. He has no connection with it at all. He gave a few million dollars to Trump on behalf of Israel. He deals with, you know, real estate and transport and everything else. I have no idea what he even does there. One thing he might be doing is spreading this mythology that the U.S. is full of Iranian sleeper cells that could activate at any moment and begin slaughtering Americans. That weirdo Laura Loomer claims that there are millions of these cells awaiting Iranian orders to strike. And she gets away with her occasional white nationalism by supporting Israel, which of course doesn't make sense, but she has to make compromises. But this fountain of lies is just getting started. There is good news. Actually, there's a lot of good news. Israeli military intelligence is up in flames. The Amman Center that operates torture camps like Camp 1391, the secret technology Unit 81, has been destroyed in the latest phase, you know, as of right now, in the Operation True Promise 3. Another facility associated with Unit 8200 at Signal Intelligence was targeted in the same operation. There was a confirmation on a successful strike on the Israeli Military Intelligence Unit 8200 at the Gliot Air Base near Tel Aviv. That's subordinate to Amman. What does Amman do? It plans terror operations, and that's currently burning, as it should be. The aerospace operations of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards, Iran has unleashed a massive barrage. Ballistic missiles, hypersonic, and drones. not just at Israel, but also at the occupying territories. The Houthis are doing the same thing. They're hitting settlers, settlements. That was under the code name Ya Ali Ibn Tatabib. It doesn't really roll off the tongue. But now the settlers have been banned from sharing or publishing images of anything that's going on. They're having their settlements destroyed. They're banned from uploading anything. But there have been a few. I've seen a few. Few leaked through social media showing these settlers, these poor panic-stricken settlers hiding in underground shelters. I guess life is different when your enemies can fight back, huh? They're not 14-year-old kids. Even traffic cameras have been turned off throughout, not just the territories, but elsewhere. Iranian computer hackers created a situation where some of the interceptor missiles malfunction. One case, they crashed into each other. And this is just getting started. So in the last, 72 hours vaguely, the Aerospace Division has, without a break, targeted 545 sites of the Israeli regime, with offensive drones across the occupied territories and Israel, and this is just getting started. Iran even, I don't think they should have done this, but they issued a warning to the settlers. Get out of here. I think so. They should have just knocked them out, but that was Colonel Reza Saeed, part of their Iranian communication center. He warned settlers that if they remain, their lives are in danger. I love the idea that they're killing settlers, that they're destroying these settlements. I don't think they should have warned them. Now, the minute this started, the minute this counterstrike started, it was June 16th, Tel Aviv imposed a sweeping, a total media blackout, which shouldn't surprise anybody, suggesting that things aren't going well. So any live broadcast, Iranian missiles and drones, whatever, that was very quickly cut off by the Israeli government. Even CNN halted their live aerial coverage from multiple cities across Israeli-occupied territories. A lot of these live streams were removed. Inside the occupied territories, a crackdown has escalated. You can go to prison for this now. Israel is terrified. In fact, Israeli media outlets have confirmed the arrest of several domestic and foreign journalists for filming the multiple waves of Iranian retaliatory missile and drone attacks. The IDF has warned that recording and sharing footage of these drone impacts, especially their timing and locations, would be considered aiding the enemy during wartime. That means things are not going well for them. Not only are the Iranians dug in, but they've mapped out every square centimeter of Israel. It was this last Monday morning. Iranian missiles specifically went after the Zionist regime's command and control centers. They had far more intelligence than the Israelis realized. They have upgraded intelligence technologies. They hit a Israeli fighter jet fuel production facility, an energy supply line in Haifa. Her oil installations there have been shut down in that city. And even more than just a blackout, the IDF has kicked out all foreign journalists in that area so they can't expose the level of damage. Now, it is true, I think, that the Iranians have been penetrated by sleeper cells. Of course, everything is just projection. That's where these assassinations have come from. How they've done it, I don't know. It's possible they came in from Azerbaijan. Maybe even older than that. I mean, there are very, very many similarities between the actions of Kiev and Israel. Their hybrid attacks are very similar. The drones were used. They were used in Moscow's long-range aviation and Iranian air defenses. Operate in an identical manner. They're very similar, targeting strategic assets from within. But of course, it's the same group of people. Both governments are Jewish, Kiev and Tel Aviv. Either Mossad is involved in training the SBU in Ukraine, which is true, but I don't think that's the most important thing. but they're simply part of a much larger network. And that network is a Jewish cult. It's a Jewish world. Plus the fact that these international organizations, which Iran has to finally put an end to, UN, OSCE, IAEA, the ICC, and all of this. Remember in Russia, at the very beginning in 2022, discovered that the OSCE, supposed to be a neutral group monitoring ceasefires, was helping the Kiev regime target Russian forces by giving them access to its cameras at the front. So, of course, they were kicked out of the country. The IAEA did the same thing in Iran, giving Israel information on the identity of the Iranian nuclear scientists. That would go far in explaining how the Mossad could pull this off and killing so many of the scientists and high-ranking Iranian military officers. Decapitation attacks, this is terrorism. Now, they failed to paralyze the chain of command, but that was the attempt. And making matters much easier for the Israelis, Syria's gone. If Assad was around, the air defenses there would have made this much more difficult. But it is the same group of people in both wars. What the Israelis are doing in Iran is almost identical to what Kiev is doing in Russia, and their press coverage is identical. Israel used portable electronic warfare systems to disrupt Iranian air defenses, at least at first. It's the same group of people. Now, the Israeli strikes were a bit more effective than the Kievan ones. You have to draw parallels here. The assassination attempts, or successful assassinations against Russian, like General Kirillov, killed in a terrorist attack back late last year, who was in the middle of investigating American involvement in biological warfare that needed resources from elsewhere. Israel's a Jewish state, and Kiev is ruled by a tiny cadre of Jews connected with the American embassy. That's the connection. But the Kiev regime also tried to attack Russian scientists, including Daniil Mikiev, who was a coordinator of the new unmanned systems for the Ministry of Defense, Konstantin Orgokov, Defense Research Institute in Voronezh, Igor Koznikov, an engineer from Tula, Sergei Potapov, cybersecurity defense specialist from Novgorod, and Valery Smirnov, a leading expert in radioelectronic protection of strategic facilities. Very, very similar. It's clearly the same group of people. The only way to counter this, and there's plenty of people saying this, is to enforce tighter control over communications. Jews have to be singled out as the enemy. There's no other way to do this. But there are pieces of good news. The Iranians have shot down at least 3 Israeli F-35 fighters. I think it's the first time a fifth-generation stealth aircraft has been successfully destroyed in the air. 3 of them. The F-35s were intercepted by the Bavar 373, their long-range surface-to-air missile system designed to counter aircraft, as well as cruise and ballistic missiles. Long-range, including advanced stealth fighters like F-35, F-22. But the F-35 is the most advanced aircraft in the whole Israeli arsenal. They were acquired from the U.S., from Lockheed Martin, but it was customized specifically for Israel for radar evasion and enabling deep penetration missions. But these stealth capabilities haven't helped them. The Iranians are ahead of them. They can detect and shoot down anything. Israeli air superiority has been shattered. These aircraft were destroyed within 48 hours. I don't know about the crews or anything else, but it demonstrates a high level of sophistication. The first night, Israeli aircraft were operating with impunity, or so it would seem, because the Israelis believed that they had severely damaged Iranian air defenses. Now, you could kind of figure, you know, Iranian radar batteries can be estimated. You could go to open source data and stuff like that. But distinguishing real from decoy is another matter. The decoys are intended to mislead anti-radiation missiles. The Israelis were using drones equipped with electro-optical and infrared sensors to strike radar installations. But once they detonate, their sensors are destroyed. So no one's quite sure what they did. Reconnaissance is very difficult. The resolution isn't good enough. Their sophisticated military decoys in Iran are extraordinary. That's a lot of what was destroyed. It's not just wooden mock-ups or something like that. They emit false radar signals to mimic actual activity. The first night of the attack from Israel, of course, mostly civilian areas in Tehran, Iran combined decoys with strategic deception by withdrawing many real radar batteries from service and hiding them underground. Israeli drones targeted these radar sites, believing they had to cripple the Iranian defenses and gained air superiority. That was what was pronounced in the press. Well, it was a costly error. And we know it's true because that's where the Israeli fighter jets ventured deeper into Iranian airspace, thinking that the radar systems had been destroyed, but they were not. They were surprised, and this is why their most advanced weapons jets were shot down. Now, the Israelis are denying this. They're not saying anything one way or the other. The U.S. is not happy about it. They don't like the idea of the F-35 technology, although I think the Russian variants are superior anyway, but still. It's interesting that Turkey has been excluded as an export for the F-35. So they have to lie about it. Now, the Iranians haven't released footage of the downed F-35s, which makes sense. They're concealing the extent of recovered technology and stuff like that. I mentioned a cyber attack already. The Arrow 3 and the THAAD systems. One of the launchers hit another with a massive detonation. Now, the last question, I know I'm going on and on here. The last question is, will the U.S. enter this war? I don't. There has been a massive transfer of air tankers to the Middle East. That is to say, tankers that could, you could refuel jets in the air. But that's not necessarily proof of American intent. Netanyahu wants the U.S. involved. There is always the possibility of some false flag. Any ceasefire that Trump is going to say is just nothing more than camouflage. But my big issue is I don't think the U.S. wants to expose itself to a first world military. If these F-35s were knocked out of the air, if stealth doesn't mean anything anymore, if Israel's, so much of its defense industry is now in flames, I don't think the U.S. wants to get exceptionally involved here. We talked about, I think it was last week, how vulnerable the American bases are throughout the area. Israel is absolutely despised, even now more than ever. The Iranians have to maintain domestic stability. You do have sleeper cells. Again, it's projection from the neocons, of course, because there are real sleeper cells in Iran. Terrorism, subversion, whatever. They have to maintain domestic stability. The Chinese are involved in resupplying the Iranians. I know that there's video of that. I don't know if it's been confirmed yet, but I know there's video of it. The Iranians have to learn their lesson that dealing with the U.S., negotiating, or even allowing anything that it does to come under the babysitting eye of some international organization isn't going to work for them. It's going to destroy them. I think they may have learned the lesson that the North Koreans learned a long time ago. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion. Talk Radio for the nationalist community.